Coming up today, we'll spend the entire program with Sean Milner and Tim Lampley with the Baptist Children's Village. We'll hear personal testimonies and how the grace of God is being poured out in the lives of children who've lived through extremely difficult circumstances.
My mother lived until I was a sophomore at Mississippi College, and alcoholism finally took her life. But there was a day when I was 5 years old that life got to be too big, and she cried out for help by pulling a trigger.
These kids, on their worst day, are crying out, "Love me. Please love me. Please help me." They may not voice that to you. They may not say that to you in those words, but they're saying through their actions, "Please help me. Please love me. Please don't turn away from me."
Thanks for joining us. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. Well, it's easy to think that some people are beyond hope, that life is dealt a blow that's simply too hard to bounce back from. But you know, God gets glory from redeeming people out of difficult circumstances. The Baptist Children's Village has helped children with extremely hard challenges for over 127 years, and I have two men with me here today who can testify firsthand how God has reached and transformed lives through the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Sean Milner is the executive director of the Baptist Children's Village, and Tim Lampley is the campus director of the Reedy Acres campus of the Baptist Children's Village. Men, welcome to the Stand Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Sean, give us a little background to the Baptist Children's Village in case people aren't familiar with what that institution is.
The Baptist Children's Village was started by the Mississippi Baptist Convention back in 1894. We received our first child in a home on May the 12th of 1897. What the Baptist Children's Village does is it ministers to children who need a home that, for whatever reason, had to be removed from their family. It's our effort to reconnect them with their family and put the family back together, hopefully built to be what God wanted that family to be. The Baptist Children's Village has other areas of service. We have in-home family support, where we work throughout the entire state of Mississippi inside of homes with families who may be struggling. It looks like they may have to be split. Well, we work inside the home with that family to prevent them from being split up. We provide a program and a home for mothers with their children who want to stay with their children. They just need a little help. So we have a residential family program where we provide a home and a program to teach mom about financial literacy, how to parent, how to keep a job, how to do those things to go. We're also inside youth detention facilities throughout the state of Mississippi, where we go inside youth detention facilities with the churches and train them up and lead them inside those facilities to not only evangelize inside youth detention facilities, but to disciple and to help those youth in those facilities, most of whom are going to go on to adult facilities. Mm-hmm. And so we like to stay with them. Then we also do resource referral programs so that if we can't help a family who's called us with a need, we're going to stay with that family to get them to who can help them. That's kind of a broad umbrella of all of our continuum of care at the Baptist Children's Village.
That's quite a broad ministry. When you began 127 years ago, primarily you were dealing with orphans in that time.
That's correct. It started as the Baptist Orphanage is what it was in the beginning. And it quickly became children who just needed a home. It wasn't that both parents had passed away, but they could not parent for whatever reason. And it was very interesting to me to learn in Scripture the Hebrew word yathom and then the Greek word orphanos, both of where we get our word orphan. In the Bible, it did not mean that both parents had passed. What it meant was there was no protector. There was no one to pass on an identity. There was no comforter. And that describes our children, and that's why it's expanded the way it has.
Wow, that's fantastic. Tim, you are a campus director, but you had been a house parent in one of these campuses, you and your wife both. You were a former pastor for 20, 30 years?
Yeah, about 35 years.
About 35 years before you went to be a house pastor. Tell us about your experience in dealing with these children and what sort of difficulties they have in their lives.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm asked, very often I was asked as a house parent, I'm asked now as a campus director, well, how do the children wind up at the Baptist Children's Village. And I usually just say, you know, there's so many reasons, abuse, abandonment, neglect, and we could go on and on, human trafficking and things of that nature. So as Sean shared earlier with your team, the kids that come to us are traumatized. Oh. They're wounded in so many ways. And when they come to us, they come very much suspicious. Am I going to be hurt here? Am I going to be let down? Can I trust these people? And my wife and I learned very quickly as we began to care for the boys, Berry Cottage, Reedy Acres Campus, mm-hmm. Lisa and I learned very quickly that what these kids need is overwhelming love, unconditional love. They need patience, and they need to know that they're going to make a mistake and not be rejected or pushed away. And so we just worked hard at loving them. We went into that just as parents of three children, but never having served in any type of capacity of caring for other people's children. And we also went at a later stage of life. I was 61 years old when I became a house parent. We did our first rotation. We came home for our first break. We collapsed in chairs in our living room. We looked at each other and said, what were we thinking? And that's no exaggeration to that story. I thought we must have been insane. Mm. And I'll just say this. It's a different gig parenting at age 61 than it is age 31. You do have more energy at that age. Yeah. But the Lord's been so good to us in terms of stamina, and then with some additional training, God's equipped us. We're no longer in the house parenting ministry aspect, but we are still very much connected to Berry Cottage and Reedy Acres Campus. But the kids need adults that they can trust. Mm. Much of our ministry now revolves around what we call TBRI, trust-based relational intervention. And it's a model that doesn't focus so much on infraction, consequence, but rather unconditional love mm-hmm. and patience, and teaching caregivers how to approach these children who have been traumatized so that they can work through their traumatized state and learn how to trust adults again. And it's working beautifully.
That is a wonderful ministry. I want to get back in just a few moments to what you have learned personally as a believer in going through this process as well. But first, let's get back to Sean just a moment, because our audience needs to know something about you. You grew up in the Baptist Children's Village and hold the record for being the longest resident at the Baptist Children's Village. You had a very difficult childhood, and you are in many cases exactly what Tim was talking about. Tell us how you came to the Baptist Children's Village and how that impacted your life.
Sure. My father was a habitual criminal. He would get put in prison in one state, then when he would get out, he'd just move his family across the country. So my oldest brother was born in Pensacola, Florida, and my baby brother was born in Sacramento, California. The rest of us were born at points in between. And my mother was an alcoholic, and he left her on a park bench in Sacramento, California, with all five of us children. There were five Milner children. And my oldest brother at that time was about 7 years old. My baby brother at that time was 5 days old, and he just left her there on a park bench. She begged money, borrowed, and got churches to contribute and got us all train fare back to her hometown, which was Port Gibson, Mississippi, down in Claiborne County. And we lived there. I was two when that happened, so obviously do not remember those events, but I do remember this one. I was 5 years old when life just got to be too big for her. And I do want to make sure everybody understands that my mother lived until I was a sophomore at Mississippi College, and alcoholism finally took her life. Mm. But there was a day when I was 5 years old that life got to be too big, and she cried out for help by pulling a trigger. Mm. I can remember going on with my older brothers and sister and pulling her back into the house, and my oldest brother running 2 miles to the nearest house that had a telephone. And I remember those events. I remember thinking, you know, we're really in trouble now. And that's where we were when the Baptist Children's Village showed up. Mm. So I went to the Baptist Children's Village when I was 5 years old and just received the benefits of the grace of all the people who made this ministry work.
and you came into the Baptist Children's Village, I would imagine, of course, you were very young,
right,
but with a certain amount of hardness.
Oh, yeah. I tell people all the time, you know, the Lord worked in my life later in life, but I wasn't buying any of it. The whole,
really?
And house parents love to talk to us about, especially in Jeremiah, the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. And I was totally of the opinion, well, if he had a plan for me, I think I can do this on my own. But the truth is, I really don't think he's there. And so I'm going to have to do this my way. And that got me in a lot of trouble, but God worked in my life and grace in my life and poured into my life like he does many of the children that come through the Baptist Children's Village, and restored me to him.
Mm. Tim, tell us about your experiences as a house parent, because you were a pastor for many, many years. And like you said, you wondered, what have we done? How did you work through that? I mean, how did you begin to understand that this is not a simple process of reaching these kids? How did the Lord work in you, and what did you learn about reaching these children?
Yeah, well, it's been a journey, no doubt. I will say this, when we retired from pastoral ministry, I had a dear friend say, do you feel like you're leaving your calling? Mm-hmm. It wasn't being angry or sarcastic. It was an honest question. And I knew enough at that point to answer him what I felt like was, from an honest answer from the depths of my heart, I said, I don't feel like I'm leaving my calling at all. I'm just going to a much smaller congregation. And God has really caused that to be my heartbeat. The thing we learned is that these children, even on their worst day, when they're defying you, when they're disrespecting you, want and need to be loved by you. We began to learn to look past immediate behavior instead of reacting to behavior and asking ourselves just some simple question. What's going on in this young kid's life? What's going on to provoke this kind of attitude or these behaviors? And it helped us, because I will say, these children can push your buttons, so to speak, in such a manner that you want to raise your voice or just become immediately angered or something of that nature, and it's never the right response. And so we learned that these kids on their worst day are crying out, love me, please love me, please help me. And they may not voice that to you, they may not say that to you in those words, but they're saying through their actions, please help me, please love me, please don't turn away from me. They've been so rejected and so disappointed throughout their lives. And so again, we just learned, okay, Lord, today's going to be one of them tough days, so help us love this young man, or help us love this young lady with your love. You know, it's amazing that when you see the ministry of Jesus, he dealt with some really, really rough folks, didn't he? And, you know, Zacchaeus, just a hated member of the Jewish community. And yet, that thief, that guy who had really just given himself over to the Roman government, I mean, he was a traitor. And yet, he climbed up in that tree because he was short of stature. He wanted to get a glimpse of Jesus, never realizing Jesus wanted to get a good look at him as well, and said, come on down. I'm going to go to your house today. We're going to eat a meal. I think he was saying, Zacchaeus, I know about you. You're a traitor. You're a lowlife. But today I'm going to show you how much I love you, just as you are, so you don't have to remain that way for the rest of your life. I think every time I see these kids come in, here's what I think. They're a wreck. But Lord, they don't have to be that wreck for the rest of their lives. Help us to love them into your family so that you can transform them from the inside out.
Mm. Amen. Scene, tell us how a parent may know when it's time to reach out for help. Because we have listeners who may be in a situation where they have very difficult children who've been traumatized. Maybe a grandparent listening, or an aunt or an uncle. How do you know when it's time to reach out for help, when you can't do what they need to have done in their lives?
That's a great question. I like to tell people, we deal a lot with children that are placed with us from grandparents, from aunts and uncles, some from of the biological parents. That's most of our children. We call those private placements. Most of our children are not placed with us through the state of Mississippi, but a lot of them are. So just for the, if you're a grandparent out there and you're caring for your child, we hear all the time, I can't get the child to school. Maybe the grandparent is physically infirmed. Maybe the grandparent is just can't do the job. If you're to where you can't do that, ask us for help. Ask us if your aunt and uncle, or maybe you know the house down the road. I like to tell people this. If you know the house down the road and you know that that family's struggling down there, we don't want you to go get involved in that because that's too big for you. But love that family enough to just go to them and say, hey, look, I know you're struggling. There's this place, the Baptist Children's Village. If you would just give them a call and just talk to them. And what really helps parents and people who need the help, they're willing to accept the help, but they're afraid they're going to lose custody of the children. So what we like to make sure everybody understands that on private placements, you're not going to lose that. We're not going to involve lawyers. We're not going to involve a judge. We're not going to involve any of those things. Just come see us. Let us help you. And then you are always in control. You can remove your children at any time. We do not take custody away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who are wondering, I would strongly encourage them, hey, if you're dealing with a behavioral issue or if you're dealing with a mental health disorder, go to a counselor. Work with the counselor and hold your family together inside that family. But if you're incapable of caring for the child, that's when you want to come and maybe talk to the Baptist Children's Village.
Do you take referrals from out of state?
Yes, the children have to be inside the state of Mississippi.
Okay.
We don't take, we'll take a referral. And what I mean by that is sometimes somebody from Louisiana will call about their children in Mississippi.
Okay.
We would consider that a referral. But each state has children's homes like the Baptist Children's Village, and so they have their own that they could turn to. What we couldn't do, and you need to be real careful in this business, you don't want to get caught in some sort of trafficking allegation.
Sure, sure.
So if the family was located in Louisiana, we would strongly encourage them to use the Louisiana homes to care for them and not take a child like that across state lines.
Tim, tell us, if you would describe what the campus would look like, how many campuses there are, and how a campus functions.
Yeah, well, we have 7 campuses across the state, ranging as far north as Tate County in Mississippi all the way down to Wiggins. So 7 campuses across the state. And I've been to a few of them, not all of them, but I can tell you that Reedy Acres, when you pull onto our property, it's just gorgeous. It's feels like you're out in the country. We're right off Highway 7 in Water Valley, but we're set back off the road. We have a beautiful lake on the property that's just sort of in front of the homes and the office, a beautiful lighted fountain in the middle of the lake. The homes are brick homes, which, by the way, have just gone through a complete renovation. Everything from fresh flooring to fresh paint to every stick of furniture brand new because of the donations of God's people across the state of Mississippi. But the homes are beautiful. The property's beautiful. It's kept well-groomed by our house parents that live there, and the homes are cleaned by house parents and residents. And we have on our campus, we have a big brown barn and a beautiful outdoor pavilion where we picnic and have fires with the kids and roast marshmallows and hot dogs and things of that nature. It is not institutional feeling at all.
Yeah.
It, in fact, I always tell people, I wished I lived there all the time. It's just that beautiful.
Mm.
Both homes have front porches with rocking chairs, and you can go out and look across the lake and the ducks and the geese that come and pay us visits.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful, beautiful, serene environment on all of our campuses.
So you have a house for girls and a house for boys?
That's correct. The boys and girls are separated, so we have a beautiful home for the boys and the girls.
And a set of house parents for both.
A set of house parents for each home, and then a set of what we call relief parents that give our our main house parents a break after so many days. They take a break and go home. And so our floaters or our relief parents float in between the boys and the girls, whereas our primaries serve a girl's family or serve a boy's family. My wife and I serve the boys while we did that.
And this is really important, Port, because I get asked this all the time. I want to make sure everybody understands. The life there is just like a life in most homes. The kids go to a public school. They attend the local church. They play football. They're cheerleaders. They're in the band.
Okay.
So the campus director, like Tim, and the house parents and the case manager and the administrative assistants there, they make it very much like a home. The kids are involved in the community. So it's very natural and not institutional.
Yeah, that's very, very good. Sean, what are some of the greatest challenges that you have? You're executive director. What are some of your greatest needs right now?
As the biggest need that we always have, the fields truly are white unto harvest, but the laborers are few. Our biggest need are always those people that God's calling out to be a house parent, somebody who wants to be on the mission field, who loves children, who's physically and mentally capable and spiritually capable to deal with maybe a difficult situation, who would love to come in and try that. So we need house parents. That's our number one, are the laborers. We also deal with some external issues. There are groups in this country who think that what's going on at the Baptist Children's Village is bad for children. And so they work on legislation to try to put us out of business. And, you know, the truth is I have dealt with some of those, and they have some good points. I think they are misdirected and way too broad. You may have heard of congregate care and the movement against congregate care. Well, the problem with that is that includes everything from these what I call scared straight programs all the way down to even foster homes. So it's just too broad, but we have to watch out for that. That's a big challenge that we spend a lot of time working on.
Mm. The Paris Hilton bill that had passed.
Correct.
Yeah, and you're still working on the language in some of those bills to make sure that they are accurate in terms of dealing with organizations like yours.
Yes, the Stop Institutional Child Abuse Act bill has been signed into law.
Okay,
but we were able to get involved with that bill. I spoke to Paris's people and was able to explain, hey, what happened to Miss Hilton was horrible, and no child should endure that. But that is this group of over here. The bill went broad and included us. And in fact, in speaking with them, once I explained to them what we did, this is what we hear from everybody. They all say, well, we're not aiming at you.
I see.
And I have to explain, but I'm the one you're hitting.
Yeah.
And so we were able to work in Washington. The Senate did a rewrite on that bill. And while I wasn't totally happy that it passed, I was a lot happier than I was before we got involved in the way it was first drafted. So we still stay on top of things like that. The Families First Prevention Services Act, again, one of those well-meaning things, but a loss on reality of what's actually going on. And I think those are going to be more harmful to the children than they are helpful.
Tim, what are some things that people may pray about if they feel like the Lord is prompting them to get into this ministry or some other kind of ministry where we're dealing with relationships? What sorts of things do you have to wrestle through and pray through?
Well, on a very regular basis, again, we have to pray for the children. It's spiritual warfare, and not just occasionally, but every day. And by the way, I believe that's the truth for every believer. It's not something that's out of the norm, but the battle is real. And these kids need, again, to know that they're going to be loved. And so we pray that these children, when they come on our campuses, will immediately begin to feel and sense the reality that they are loved, that they're valuable, that they're not a throwaway, that they're here for a reason, that there's real purpose in their lives. So we would ask people to pray for these boys and girls that come to us. By the way, I think age 1 all the way through age 24 now, because of a brand new track that we're developing, our independent living track, that can start as a young man or a young lady turns 18. And they may not be ready for outside of our community, so to speak, but we have an independent living track that will help them get through college or help them start that initial job. And they'll live in an area where there's a lot more freedom and just learn how to be a meaningful adult. So pray for our workers. I would say this, pray for our workers that they would carry with them on a 24/7 basis the mission that God's called us to, that we'd keep the main thing, and these children are the main thing. The gospel is at the very core of what the Baptist Children's Village is about. It is our goal to share the gospel with every at-risk child and their family that we get to take care of. We see a lot of them, many of them, give their lives to Christ and follow the Lord Jesus in believers' baptism and go on to do great things for the Lord. So pray for our workers that they'll be focused to not get sidetracked on things that don't matter, and pray that these kids would really have a heart that would begin to open up to the love of God and the love of these precious workers, these parents, these house parents.
Seen, how can people find out more about the Baptist Children's Village? How could they get in touch with you and find out about the ministry?
They can go online at any time. Our website is www.baptistchildrensvillage.com or bcvms.com. Go on our website, read about us. We have a lot of information out there. But one of the things that I really like people to know, because I'm asked, hey, what are your needs? What can you do? The thing that I like to ask people to do is to call us or call Tim or a campus director and come visit us. Mm-hmm. Just come see us. Come tour a campus. Come look and see what's going on. And what happens, and I remember this as a child, when church groups or Sunday school classes or men's groups or women's groups would come to the campus and they would look, the beautiful thing that happened was they would see, oh, wouldn't it be great if they had a pavilion? Or wouldn't it be great if this cottage needs painting? Or wouldn't it be great? And so they get to see for themselves, hey, we have this skill, we have this ability, let's go invest it there. And it creates this partnership relationship with us. So I would say contact a campus director, contact us through the website, and simply say, hey, we want to come see.
Very good.
We would love to have you.
We'll put those links on our podcast page. Sean Miller, Executive Director of the Baptist Children's Village, and Tim Lampley, Campus Director, thank you both men for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for having us.
And next week, it's a best of edition of The Stand Radio with author and Bible teacher Randy Alcorn. We'll talk about grief and what awaits every believer in the new heaven and new earth. For guest information and program notes, check out our page at afr.net. And for a free trial subscription to The Stand magazine or to sign up for our daily email update, visit afa.net/thestand. Thanks for being with us today, and join us again next time for The Stand Radio.